Hello, hello,
hello,
hello,
and welcome into Section 119 Sports. This is a weekly Aggie podcast for the diehards by the diehards. I'm Jaden.
I'm Daniel. I die really hard.
I'm Trevor.
And we are thrilled to be here talking some Aggie sports with you guys. A lot of good stuff going on if you ignore, like, the big money sports this year, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure thrilled is the operative term there, but, I mean, actually this past week was pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, we had some nice tennis beating some top 25, and they also wiped out a pretty long home win streak for a certain team down in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the weekend as a whole, I think something like seven of eight teams that competed won. So that's pretty cool.
Who was the one that lost?
It was gymnastics at New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a very good team. Yeah. They still did all right, but lost to New Hampshire.
That's the weird thing with, like, those college sports is, like, you hear these teams, you're like, oh, how'd they lose to New Hampshire or stuff like that? And then you actually look at it and it's like, oh, wait, New Hampshire's like, they're actually good at something.
And like some of the Olympic sports. Or like Colorado College, who is like somehow in the WAC for soccer. Or I mean, the Mountain West.
Yeah.
And then you look at like hockey and then it's like North Dakota and like Minnesota and stuff that are always winning championships. Johns Hopkins.
Yeah,
exactly. Medical school is like the best lacrosse school in the country. Okay, that's a tangent.
Anyway, so Trevor mentioned the tennis team went down to TCU, who had won, didn't you say something like 28 straight?
They won 31 straight matches
31
at home.
31 straight home matches.
Ranked 12th in the country.
So, unbelievable. I mean, and like, upset them.
Yeah, relative to like maybe like basketball or something, this would be like the basketball team going into UNC and coming away with a victory. And also like a buzzer beater, because it was also like the last match of the day is where we actually got the win 4-3. So, I mean, for the tennis team, that's a huge victory. Like, for the program itself, for everything about the team, that is a massive, I guess, boost to morale, especially because the season's not going quite as maybe they'd have hoped to begin with.
Well, and you know, this is not necessarily Aggie related, but this is the first time in probably a year and a half that I watched tennis, and it wasn't the Aggie tennis match, but I feel like these two are related because I was up super, super late and couldn't fall asleep, and I watched a little bit of tennis on TV. So,
did you watch the Federer and Nadal?
That is exactly what it was. It was great.
I remember those two were like 1-2. Now they're 9-17, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, that's another side tangent, but that honestly might be the best moment for sports for me, is seeing those two in a Grand Slam final again. But going back to the men's tennis team, here's kind of the question I kind of had, because I think like men's tennis is probably the best sport we've got right now. I mean, they won a Mountain West title. They're pretty successful. But they haven't really had, I think, a marquee win, and this kind of delivers that for the program to maybe elevate to greater heights. Even further beyond like what they've been the past couple of years. So as just looking at that as the program, where do you think this kind of ranks as among like the best Aggie victories of any sport over the past like 20 years or so?
You know, I'd say it's certainly up there. To go and beat a team ranked that high with such a long winning streak at their place, pretty miraculous. It may be over the past 10 years, it may be the biggest Aggie victory that we've seen. Because let's see, the Utah State
like the
basketball
Nevada
team beating Nevada, that was
2006 or 7? I can't remember.
I think 7. So around, I'd say since then, this very well may be the biggest Aggie victory. If you just look at overall, like not paying attention to the importance of the sport or whatever. But
yeah. I think the one that just came to mind maybe as being bigger would be Utah State's win in basketball over Ohio State in the tournament. That was like, I think, 2000 or 2001. I think maybe that just because, I mean, that's a tournament win.
Yeah,
I was just looking that up, and that was in 2001. And then they lost to UCLA 75-50. But first round win in overtime, 77-68 over Ohio State.
You know, the truth is, I guess that's as far as impressiveness goes. But the truth is, as far as importance, this really isn't all that important. I mean, if you look at what the tennis team has done this season, they're not like they've been impressive, but they've had a really bad weekend as well. And this is a non-conference game or match, I guess. It's a non-postseason match, and so it's really just against a random opponent on the road. Which, sure, it helps boost our resume and helps build confidence and momentum and everything, but in the long run, it doesn't help us closer to a Mountain West title or anything like that. So it's not that important, but it is impressive. No question. I'm not trying to take away from that. It's definitely impressive.
I'd argue a little bit on the importance factor. I mean, I get like what you're saying with like Mountain West. Like, this is frankly a meaningless game. We're not going for a national title for a tennis team anytime soon. So I mean, that's not coming into play. But I kind of like equate it, like, if the football team had won their game at like Wisconsin several years ago, I kind of would equate it there. Definitely not in like overall importance, because I mean, football, as much as I do like tennis, football is much more important in terms of money and everything else.
Right, right.
But just on the program level, I think this has almost about the same effect as a win over Wisconsin might have had. I mean, just for recruiting, being able to say that Utah State now can actually go into someone else's territory and come out with a game. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm overselling that, but that's just kind of my opinion. That is a huge win. I'd say maybe top five for the past 15 years for Aggie history, I guess. But
you know, I'm thrilled for them. It's good for them. You said we've also got a couple of tennis players in the top 25 in the region.
Yeah. So just like quick background for anybody that's not familiar with the Intercollegiate Tennis Association rankings, they also split it up to region. For nationally, we're not even close to ranked right now, which, I mean, we're 4-3. That's understandable. Region, we have two players that are in the top 20 for just singles. So we've got a player at second and a player at 18th. And then we also have two doubles teams, which are in the top 10 for the mountain region as well. So, I mean, we're getting recognition, and that's, I guess, the first step to becoming a great program.
About the doubles, two in top 10, usually you only have two doubles teams on the varsity.
Yeah, so I mean, it's impressive what Utah State's doing for tennis. I mean, I think by far right now tennis is the best sport here at Utah State. I mean, Mountain West title, we can't argue with that.
I wouldn't say by far, because the gymnastics team is doing really well, and we'll talk about them here in a sec. I just want to point out the tennis team is now, they've been on the road their entire season so far, and they've still got three more road matches at Arizona, and then versus Marquette and Grand Canyon, both in Arizona.
At Arizona as well, that's where last year's coach, I can't remember his name, but after taking Utah State to this kind of newfound territory of tennis success, he bolted for Arizona. So that is a rematch, I guess, with an old coach.
Going to see a familiar face. And then they finally come home the 3rd of March. So if you've been wanting to see some tennis action, that's against BYU. 3rd of March. Mark it on your calendar. Hopping over to what I think is probably, I probably agree with you that tennis is the most successful sport right now, as they do have a Mountain West title, but I think gymnastics is right up there. They are a very impressive team.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what they've been doing so far this season. I mean, I don't have the full record right with me right now. Do you guys either have that?
Yeah, so the gymnastics team, they started out with their worst match in like several years. Meet. Now I got saying match, and I should be saying meet, but then I'll be saying game. Anyway, they start out with the worst meet they've had in several years, where they went and they lost to Arizona pretty badly, but they beat Texas Women's, which is apparently a school.
Texas Women's?
Not like Texas Longhorn Women, like Texas Women's College. And then they defeated at home North Carolina State and Bowling Green State, went and beat BYU, and fell just this past Sunday to New Hampshire. They held the lead through most of the meet and then fell right at the end. But still just posting really good scores. I went and did the math earlier. If you took out the first meet, which they eventually will be able to do. They only keep six total meet scores. And so eventually that one will disappear. And if you take that out right now, they're sitting at number 18 in the country. That's pretty good.
Damn.
There's also some other weird things about only taking six. I think you only get three home and three away. You know, you have to take your three best roads and your three best homes. So once they get up to that too, they can even really take that out.
Yep. I imagine that at the end of the season, this past meet with New Hampshire may end up disappearing as well. If they continue to progress, which I really think that they have every opportunity to do. So there's a very good chance that this team ends up in the top 25 or near it, or, you know, even within a few weeks could be sniffing it. And they are coming home this Friday to play BYU again. They went and beat BYU. It was very, very, very close. It was, I mean, a fraction.
It's like a tenth of a point.
It was a tenth of a point. So, I mean, ridiculously close, barely.
So one girl didn't split her legs in the air. That's the difference.
Yeah. So the, you know, BYU is going to be looking for revenge, but coming up to Logan, there is really a home court, home floor. I think that's probably advantage. What it is. Home vault advantage. Home equipment advantage.
Home uneven bars advantage.
So, you know, they're trying to break the attendance record as well, which I believe is something like 6,500. So it's ambitious, but, you know, it'd be sweet to see the Spectrum packed. If you can, that's...
Do we even get 6,500 Friday for the men's games right now?
Right now, probably around that, probably about.
So but, gymnastics is trying to beat the men's basketball team for attendance. Let's help them do it.
Friday at 7 p.m. at the Spectrum. Now, we've talked about all of the really good stuff going on at Utah State. Now on over to the basketball team.
Semi-good.
Which, you know, I don't think that probably anybody in the world thought that Utah State was going to beat Fresno State this weekend.
I think there was...
Not weekend, I guess. It was weekend. Friday.
Yeah.
Saturday. I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's initially nobody gave it a chance. I mean, I think anybody that's watching the team realizes this team's just inconsistent. So, I mean, if they have a good day, I mean, we almost beat Boise as well. Played within single digits of, like, BYU, too. I mean, I guess I'll repeat kind of what I've said a couple of times before, is this team's not bad. It's just really wildly inconsistent.
It's really... go without scoring for 5 or 6 minutes, even though the team is only scoring, you know, 4 or 5 points through those 5 or 6 minutes, but still, so if you could ump yours points in those 5 or 6 minutes, you would have a lot better chance of winning.
Well, and I was talking to you about this earlier in the week, Daniel, and that's inconsistency is a problem that it's not a good problem to have, but it's not as bad as a lot of the problems you could have.
It's not as bad as just being purely bad.
Exactly. I'd rather be inconsistent than consistently bad or consistently injured or whatever. But Utah State, like, this team has shown so many flashes of brilliance going and defeating UC Irvine on the road this weekend, being able to beat third place Fresno State. Earlier in conference, those wins against New Mexico, UNLV. Like, there's still a glimmer of hope for me. Not that we're going to, like, win the conference or anything. Of course, anything could happen. But that this team could spark right around the time that they need to in Mountain West Conference tournament time. And following the previous game, the Fresno State game, I was at the post-game press conference, and both Kobe McEwen and Coach Duryea said something. They said almost in the same words that this is a young team. We're not worried about wins and losses right now. We're going to spark right when we need to at the beginning of March. So I'm excited to see how everything turns out. You know, sure, we're towards the bottom of the conference right now, but we're also only one game out of sixth place. The Mountain West is bad, guys.
Yeah.
We can easily end up fifth, sixth, maybe fourth even, if they just start getting their stuff together. However, toughest game of the season, I think. Well, toughest game of the conference season.
Don't we still have to go play at Nevada?
Yeah, no.
Far, I mean.
Okay, so yeah. Far, yeah.
The conference, the toughest game of the conference season that we've played so far is going to be tomorrow, Wednesday.
That's a fair assumption. I think, first of all, let's give Nevada props. This, if there's any team in the Mountain West that has a shot at a at-large bid in the NCAA tournament, it's Nevada. Nobody else has even a dream of that at this point.
No, not even close.
Yeah.
I think we're almost to a point where nobody has a shot at a postseason bid, at-large bid.
I don't know. NIT and CBI sometimes get desperate. But or the, what is it, the web.com insiders tournament or something like that. Anyways, I think that's kind of what we should be looking for the last 10 or so games of the regular season here. It's not like for the team to really be good per se. I mean, obviously we should be looking for that, but just consistently good. Because I think in every game really so far, there's been like moments where like we've had either gone on a good run and gone like that a 13-point lead against Fresno, or we've made it look like we're going to go on that run, but then we make it some stupid mistake. Either we leave our feet on defense and then offense gets an easy bucket, or we make a really terrible pass on offense and it bounces out of bounds. Those are the young, immature, inconsistency mistakes that just, I think, really have plagued the team the entire season and really are to blame for a good 6 or 7 of our losses, really.
But then you look at this previous game against Fresno State, and you say, okay, what was different about that game? A few things come to mind. One, and I think that this does get overlooked a little bit, Norbert Janicek was able to stay out of foul trouble.
Yep.
He's not a great player. He's not a superstar, but he's a decent to good player.
He's at least tall, and
he's the best big man we've got right now. Regardless of anything else, he's the best big man we've got by a ways, in my opinion. He stayed out of foul trouble for the first time in a long time and actually was able to stay in for, I believe, 30 minutes in the game. And his numbers weren't eye-popping. Yeah, he grabbed 8 rebounds and had a pretty good helping of points as well. But just having him on the floor made a big difference. Another,
yeah.
Sam Merrill stepped up big time. You look at his box score as well. It wasn't spectacular. I think he ended with 5 or 6 points, but he also had 8 rebounds and I believe 6 assists. And then just looking at the team as a whole, I just think that they went out and they played mistake-free basketball. They weren't turning the ball over. They weren't making all those freshman mistakes that we've seen so many times. So that's part of what gives me a little bit of hope. It's like, you know, this team has the talent. It's just if they're going to play like it.
Yeah. That also kind of brings to mind one thing I saw in this past game is I was kind of, like we talked about it 2 weeks ago, I think, about how we sometimes don't see there's any direction on offense. I kind of saw on offense, actually, this was kind of intriguing to me. The main set that we do, or the main like formation we start out with, is we either have like Rector and McEwen up kind of near half court, and then we have usually 2 big guys on the elbows and then 2 guys in the corner. So it's usually like Sam Merrill and maybe like, I don't know, like Rector, Moore. That's who the other guy I'm thinking is. So it'd be like Rector or Merrill and Moore in the corners, and then like D'Argentin and Janicek at the elbows. Then they run screens off of that. They'd run a little bit of motion. And a lot of what we do is centered on that kind of formation on offense. And so kind of
a lot of outside the perimeter.
Yeah, a lot of outside the perimeter. But even then, like that play that we ran against Indiana State to tie it up there at the end with a coming McEwen and to take the lead, that was also, I think, out of that set as well. So, I mean, but the thing with that is that relies on Janicek staying out of foul trouble. Also, Kobe McEwen staying out of foul trouble because he's kind of been struggling with that.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Like he's averaged like 2 or 3 fouls a game, fouled out on several occasions as well. And also all around. I mean, we're not deep. We don't have guys that we can plug in. We don't have another Merrill sitting on the bench. I mean, you've got Quinn Taylor. You've got, like, Barnaba, but that's a drop-off.
I feel like there's a pretty significant drop-off right now between our first and second strings.
Yeah. So once we do hit foul trouble or some guy has to go to the bench, those sets kind of fall apart, and it becomes Rector driving wildly into the lane or McEwen starts having to just toss one up from 30 feet at the end of the shot clock. Granted, that worked against Fresno.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work all the time. That's the fear I have, I guess, when we get to the conference tournament.
Another few stats that kind of jump out to me is we're only, you know, only 2 points down on the points in the paint, where we're normally way down on that compared to the other team. Also, that, you know, second chance points, we were tied. Usually we're way down on that second chance points. Usually they get a lot more second chance points than we do. And another one is we almost made, we were 74% from the free throw instead of sub 50%.
That's also a big thing, is free throw shooting for us. Like, I probably should have looked that up before I came here, but it seems every time that we're struggling, we're below 50% at the free throw line, or we're just shooting poorly. But when we have these good games or games in the past, it's like we're perfect on free throws in the second half, or we're shooting 80% or something like that.
Well, another thing to look at is we out-rebounded them 40-30. And you win the rebound battle, a lot of time you're going to win the game, or at least have a shot to win the game. So I think it was so many different things coming together. Things that, like, we've seen the team do well at times, things that we've done really poorly at times, but everything was working. And I don't know if that's the confidence, if really what it, I don't really know what it is. And so I'm interested to see at Nevada how they come out and play at that game. Coach Duryea talked about, he said that the team just had way more focus throughout the entire week prior to Fresno State. He said that shoot around, it was a different team. And I'm starting to think, you know, maybe this team, I get it's one game, so I don't want to overreact, but I'm thinking, you know, in that game, maybe they just kind of figured it out. It's a young team, and every young team has that point where they kind of figure it out and they start clicking and progressing from there. And I think that this could be the progression point of our season.
It could be. It also could just be chance.
It could be. I mean, absolutely. I mean, we shot out of our minds.
Yeah. Granted,
we're not going to do all that around, every game.
That was probably the best game we played all season. Because not only did we score 78, I think, we also held Fresno State, a good team, to 65 points for 40 minutes. That is a good formula to win a basketball game. Like,
yep.
If I'm given the choice, I would much rather be able to hold a team to 65 points on a consistent basis than score 80.
Yeah, and I talked a little bit about Sam Merrill and the impact that he had. I want to bring something else up that Sam Merrill just changed the game in this way. So the leading scorer, actually, I don't believe he's the leading scorer, but he's either the second or third leading scorer for Fresno State, Jamel Taylor. He's one of the best shooters in the entire country for three-point field goals and for regular field goals. For in regular field goal shooting, he's number one in the Mountain West and 30-something in the country. In three-point shooting, I believe he's number seven or number eight in the country. You know what Sam went out and did to him? One of seven and one of five from the three-point line. That is efficient defense.
And that brings up the point that really drives home the, I guess, the way that this program is going. It's one thing if we had brought in, like, Sam Merrill and Kobe McEwen, and they were good, but didn't work. Both of those guys are probably at least some of the hardest workers on the entire team. You were even talking about, like, when you went to interview Kobe a couple while ago, that the SIDs told you he's there after practice, every practice, shooting for, like, 30, 45 minutes. So, I mean, only are they super talented as freshmen, another stat, Kobe McEwen's averaging 15 points per game right now. That is the second best for a freshman in Aggie history. That's only behind, like, I think, J.C. Carroll.
It's unbelievable like what Kobe's doing. And he's really a leader of the team.
Yeah.
As a freshman, he's a leader of the team.
And he puts in the work.
And exactly. And what I was telling you is I'm currently working on a story for the Statesman. Should be out within a week or so here on Kobe McEwen. And so I had the opportunity to go, and I sat in on the last 15, 20 minutes of practice. And I was going to interview him after the practice, but ended up sitting there for another 30, 40 minutes as he just shot and shot and shot and shot and made most of his shots, but the same shot over and over and over again, getting mad every time he missed it, like visibly frustrated every time he missed a shot. The guy works so hard. And then I was able to talk with his high school coach as well, Curtis Condi, And he talked about he'd get regular phone calls from Kobe saying, "Coach, can you come open the gym up at 5 o'clock in the morning? I wanna get in there and get some practice in." and then he'd get there first thing in the morning and stay way past practice. You've got a leader who knows how to, I mean, aside from all of his physical ability, which is obviously tremendous, he's got the leadership, he's got the work ethic, and I seriously believe that he is the kind of kid that can transform a program. He reminds me so much of, not style-wise, but ability or like on-the-court presence of a guy like J.C. Carroll.
Well, I was actually thinking, I saw a tweet this week from some like basketball talking head guy that was talking that if you're looking for the next Damian Lillard or C.J. McCollum, who are from Weber State and Lehigh, respectively, which if you're not from Utah, you have no idea where either of those schools are. He's saying if you're looking for another guy like that that's just going to blow up in the NBA, Kobe McEwen. That was his pick for that guy. One, that's freaking high praise. Two, it's actually does not sound crazy when I first heard it. And more than anything, that might be the biggest compliment I can give, is that we can compare him to a Damian Lillard or C.J. McCollum, maybe not in like type of player style like you were saying, but we can compare them to hit that and not laugh.
Yeah. And one other thing that I want to mention, and I guess I don't want to spoil my whole article so nobody has to read it, but talking to Kobe, I'm just so impressed with that kid. I asked him, what's the legacy that you want to leave at Utah State when you're gone and people think back to Kobe McEwen, what do you want him to remember? And he said, I want to be the greatest player that has ever played at Utah State. Didn't hesitate for a second before he said this. He said, I want to be the Wayne Estes or the J.C. Carroll of this generation at Utah State. I want my name up in the rafters, and I want my face all over the place just like theirs are. And I think that, like, you know, I get it's early on. I don't want to, like, overhype everything and put on the Homer glasses or whatever, but he has a legitimate shot to do it, and the numbers back it up.
I was going to say, if he continues to do what he's doing his freshman year, he will be on those pictures on the wall. He will be his name up there in the rafters. He, you know, I believe he will if he continues to do what he's doing now and continues to grow.
Yeah. So, like, I remember when the season first started, like, we were making some bold predictions here, and I said, like, I asked what you guys thought the chances were that Kobe breaks the scoring record here, which is a little over 2,000. I remember, like, we kind of laughed it off a little bit, but, I mean, right now, I mean, 15 points per game as a freshman, he's bound to improve. So, I mean, as long as – if he does stay 4 years, which the more we watch him, the more he's like, this guy could actually make it to the NBA. But if he stays 4 years – I think that territory is well within reach.
Yeah, I mean, even if you've given up on this team, which I get it, a lot of people have, they were pretty poor there for a while, 4-game losing streak, whatnot. Even if that's the case, you can get a cheap ticket, get out to the Spectrum, and watch a kid with talent like Kobe McEwen and Sam Merrill and so many guys on this team that are just fun to watch to me that, you know, even if we lose, I'm like, you know, it's pretty cool to watch Norbert Janicek throw up that hook or
Dargenton see make Alex some Dargenton ridiculous block
getting all those offensive rebounds. And, you know, it's a team that one thing that, like, I haven't felt about this team is that they're just out there punching the clock like I often did with the football team. I often felt like they were just out there playing so they could pick up their scholarship and get the girls and then go to football's Castle over Manor. And it's over. Exactly. This basketball team, I feel like this is a team that truly, really wants to win. And what you want about, you know, rebounding and lack of effort or whatever. I don't think that's the case.
It's definitely not the case. This team, we can see them fighting each and every game, I think. And the only times they come up short is because they have some lack of ability or size, I guess, for rebounding. I mean, let's be honest, we didn't really have much of a chance up against like BYU or Purdue or Texas Tech because we're just kind of smaller. But they're fighting, and at the very least, like you said, fun ticket. And let's, like, I'll just say it, I guess it's bold, but if you want to say that you saw an NBA player when they were in college, Kobe McEwen is probably the best bet for Utah State to have that. To be able to say that for a long, long time. 6'4", athletic, smart as well, and he can just make some really good plays. I mean, if he does progress over the next couple of years, he could be in the NBA. If that's not reason enough to go see this team, I don't know what is.
So I have a question for you guys. Of this 9-11 season and 3-6 Mountain West, how much of that do you think falls on Tim Duryea, the coach, in coaching?
If we're grading like 11 losses on like how to like assign them to people, I would say he's probably maybe like a grand sum of 3-4 losses maybe. I haven't agreed with a ton of the things he's maybe done, or a couple of like his tactics. The Indiana State game being completely overrun by a simple zone, pretty much. But I mean, there are, even in that game, if we make three throws, which is completely on the players, that we still win that game. A couple other games might be the same as well. I mean, I don't think Duryea is without fault, but I don't think he should be the scapegoat at all for this. I think it's just a young team.
I think it's very hard to say at this point. You know, he could be at fault for more than that. He could be the main problem. I don't know. Or it could just be, you know, this team is young, has taken a while to click together. I'm not ready to, like, pin the blame on Tim Duryea. Yeah, things aren't looking great for him, and if he has another season like this, it's probably time to pull the plug, assuming things don't really shape up this season. You know, another losing season, two in a row after how many winning seasons we've had. Yeah, I think it's time to pull the plug. But I'm definitely not out here, like, calling for his job at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'd give him kind of like the extra year. That'll give him time to really put his players onto the court. Like, last year, he really didn't have much of his stuff. I mean, and he also had a lot of the stuff he was given transfer away. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is the first year we see, like, his players, they've made immediate impact. So give him another year to, like, let those guys learn and grow, and then also bring in, like, Dwayne Brown and whoever else comes for next year as well, and see what happens. I mean,
well, and I know that, like, you can't really, like, it's college basketball, transfers happen, stuff happens. You gotta just kind of deal with it and make it work anyway. But can you imagine this team right now, with as much as I hate the dude and as much as I hate to say it, with David Collette, who's killing it in the Pac-12, and Lou Evans, who's out killing it in the SEC for Tennessee, have both those guys in our weakest position? It'd be a different team.
We'd be better than 9-11, I bet.
I absolutely agree. So, you know, like Daniel said, I give him another year, see what he could do next year with a little bit more. You know, he'll have his guys in Clay Stahl and Darren Henson in there playing. And, you know, who knows what kind of freshman and JUCO guys we'll get this offseason. But I'm not ready to pull the plug. Anyway, we've talked about all the major Aggie sports going on right now. Football is not, there's not a ton happening with football that, you know, is worth talking about at this time. But next week we will talk a little bit about National Signing Day, which is coming up tomorrow. Maybe go over a couple of the guys that we're more excited about. I'm not expecting us to land anybody too huge, but, you know, there'll be a few.
LeBron James Jr. committed to Utah State.
I think he's in like seventh grade or something.
I don't care. I'd still take him.
Yeah, so we'll go over that. Just looking at the calendar for the week, like we've talked about, I think, just about everything on there, but men's basketball coming up tomorrow. Women's tennis on the road, taking on Missouri Wednesday. Women's basketball at Nevada Wednesday. This weekend, women's gymnastics at 7 o'clock at home versus BYU. Come help them break the all-time attendance record. And that's really about it. Men's basketball heading up to Boise on Saturday. That'll be a tough one. Hopefully they.
Yeah, I'm not expecting much out of that one.
Yeah, Boise is a good team. And women's basketball at home against Boise, 2 o'clock Saturday. Track is doing their own thing. I don't really know what that is, but they're in Nampa, Idaho, and Albuquerque, New Mexico at the same time, apparently.
Well, sometimes what they do with that is they'll send, like, the main guys to one, the bigger tournament, and then just some of the lower, you know, sub people that aren't, like, the varsity to the other one that's not as big as of a tournament.
Yeah.
Good to know. And then next week, at the same time as we usually record this show, apparently the men's basketball team is on the road Tuesday night at 7 o'clock p.m. I thought they usually played on Wednesdays, so that kind of caught me on off guard, but they're at Colorado State on Tuesday. So maybe we'll have to move this around.
Yeah, we might. We'll see. But we'll be back next week, again, covering everything from National Signing Day for football, and then whatever we get from the basketball team, because that's a mixed bag.
It's a bag full of cats. Yeah, I'll tell you this. It's going to be a really fun show to do next week with wins against Nevada and at Boise State under our belt. And if we decide to move it later, win at Colorado State. Anyway.
We'll see.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. This is Section 119 Sports. Find us on Twitter at 119 Sports. Have a good night or day or morning or whenever you're listening to this. Goodbye.
Bye.